Okay, we're on the next agenda item, which is update on implementation of ground fish sectors under the Northeast Multi-Species Fishery Management Plan. Dan Morris is going to give a presentation to the council, and then there'll be time for questions and answers. Dan?
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Dan Morris, and I've had the pleasure of addressing the council a couple times before, once on regulatory streamlining and another time on referendum procedures. This presentation promises to be at least as riveting as those two. So hold on to your hats. This is going to be wild. I work in the Northeast Regional Office, and one of my duties is to help coordinate the efforts of the staff who are working with industry and amongst themselves to develop the policies and programs that are needed for sector management. And I sincerely appreciate this opportunity to speak to the council about the progress that's been made to date. Okay, these are the key points. We're on track for a May 1 start date, and I'm going to be addressing the government's preparations. Several of the sector representatives and managers are in the room today, and I don't propose to speak on their behalfs and their business considerations and the many challenges that they're up against. I'm going to focus on what the government is up to, and you know, perhaps if there's time, they'll have questions or want to elaborate on how it's going for them. But there has been a great deal of collaboration. This transition to sectors has been a huge undertaking for NIMS and for industry. And the self-management by sectors of their use of their allocation and ACE and has gotten them into the data management business in a very big way. And our process, our program development process, requires that as these various monitoring and reporting questions are worked on and resolved, it has to be described in a sector's operations plan, which has to be approved by NIMS, and then parts of it get codified and basically rolled into regulation. This need for both the industry and government to work out approvable, practicable details has prompted a great deal of communication and in collaboration between sector components, sector proponents and the industry. It's not always a comfortable collaboration. We don't always agree, but it is something that we've been working on for 8 months now, and I think it is succeeding in bringing along monitoring and reporting programs and implementation programs that are going to be ready on May 1st. But they're not going to be perfect on May 1st. We're still going to have things to learn about efficiency in reporting and monitoring and running these programs. And NOAA fully intends to continue to work with the industry after May 1st to effect in-season improvements, as well as looking ahead to fishing year 2011. Because one of the additional point that I want to make is that beginning this summer, we really need to start getting operations plans for fishing year 11 together so that we can start this cycle again. I hope that cycle will be more efficient and the communications will many of these efforts will be behind us by then. Okay, so who's involved? There have been loads of people involved with this, and here's a list of the NOAA's groups that have been involved: the Northeast Regional Office, the Northeast Fisheries Science Center, the Office of Law Enforcement, General Counsel. And keep in mind that for all of the NOAA staff who are working with industry and, you know, and calling and working on these problems, there's somebody who's a sector proponent that has to answer the phone, answer the email, and not only do that, tirelessly collaborating with NIMS, but then turn around and explain their operations and what sectors are all about to dozens or hundreds of permit holders and vessel owners. So we just have great appreciation and applaud the efforts of the sector managers and proponents and thank them for their work and collaborating with us. But this presentation is going to focus on what's happening on the government side. And but I do want to stress that the industry members and a few NGO representatives have been critical to this effort. Also, since I'm focused on implementation, I haven't listed on this slide the council staff and their efforts in the development of Amendment 16 and the decision process and the crafting of the EIS for Amendment 16 and the EA for Framework 44. Those are extraordinary efforts that got us to this point so we can work on the implementation. Okay. So there are four major activity areas in our work on sector implementation. There's the regulatory and operations plans that I mentioned. Nested within that are the development of certain policies and programs that feed into those operation plans and support largely monitoring and reporting. And then there are data management and data automation efforts. And of course, there's a major communication effort that supports all of these programs. So we'll begin with rulemaking. Now, this is rulemaking, basically taking what the council delivers as an amendment package all the way through to publication in the Federal Register and implementation is a rather routine task for the Northeast Regional Office. It's a path that we know very well, but I think we need to all be aware of the volume and complexity and the timeline for these three actions. We have, of course, Amendment 16, the sector rule, and Framework 44 are integrated regulations, and to move as much information as that along in a way that is in keeping with our requirements under NEPA and the Magnuson Act and our regulatory processes has been quite a challenge. I would like to note that a NEPA document, environmental assessment, has been prepared for every sector addressing, and that document addresses and analyzes that sector's particular operations and membership. And these documents were the product of extensive work from the sector managers who had to craft the beginning chapters that describe the actions, describe the operations and their membership. And they collaborated with an environmental consulting firm, Intrix, that our staff managed a contract with to do the analytical sections. And finally, NIMS NEPA staff have been working closely with the sector representatives, providing templates, looking at draft documents, and also coordinating their work with the consultant, and also conducting the cumulative effects analysis. And then there have been changes that have been initiated along the way. Our fantasy was that we would get these ops plans on September 1st along with the rosters, and everything would be set in stone. But as any of these folks here have been working on it will tell you, it's been more fluid than that, or rather more dynamic than that, as we've been working to solve particular problems. We've opened up rosters and done these other things. Each adjustment, or many of the adjustments to kind of the set of rules for sectors, requires a complementary change in the ops plan, which then has to be addressed in regulation and still fit within our timeline. And here is that timeline. Of course, Amendment 16 proposed rule, as Pat said earlier today, was published, and the comment period has just closed. Same for the sector rule. Framework 44 proposed rule should publish in a few days, and will be open for comment. Now, despite administrative challenges and the size of these documents and the complexity of them, all three are on track to publish by the end of March or early April for an effective date on May 1st. Okay. So we have been accused on many occasions of building the airplane while trying to fly it. And that's, to some degree, that's a fair criticism. The three rules that we just listed have been on a set publication timeline, and that's really been the driver. And so we've had to move forward with those regulations, but at the same time, there have been programs that needed to be developed in to support sectors and do everything the council has asked for. Now, the reason we're doing this is because Amendment 16, in some cases, provided a requirement or a basic structure, but relied on NIMS to develop the detailed requirements. So as we encountered something like dockside monitoring, 50% coverage of trips in fishing year 2010, we looked up and said, okay, what does that mean to us? And there began a process, in that case, with the help of Gulf of Maine Research Institute, to describe what dockside monitoring will look like. And then there was a pilot study to test it. And then there were standards that were published and debated and worked over. And so each one of these programs that have been established or set forth by Amendment 16 or hit upon by NOAA as being needed for sectors has required these sorts of deliberations and development to ensure that they're consistent with Amendment 16, enforceable, practicable for all sectors, flexible and adaptive for special cases and lessons learned, and consistent with or preparatory to common pool requirements. And dockside monitoring is a good example of that, in that in 2012 that comes online for a common pool. So something of what we learn with sector implementation should serve that as well. And here's a partial list of kind of the big items. Of course, dockside, at-sea monitoring, and these several other items. For every one of these, there are probably 5 or 6 or 10 minor details that folks in Sustainable Fisheries Division and Fisheries Statistics Office and the Science Center have been coordinating, communicating with sector managers on to work out and, you know, massage into the ops plans and the implementing regulations. So for dockside monitoring, I mentioned GMRI has helped immensely with that in establishing the a working group for it and leading a working group for it and a pilot study, and they're currently working with sectors to support the funding of dockside monitoring once the year begins. At-sea monitoring takes a couple different forms. In 2010 and 2011, it's voluntary for a sector to have its own sector monitoring program. But because it's possible, we had to come up with some standards. So that was one that we had to deliberate. But also, the other part of it is beginning this year, NIMS is stepping up at-sea monitoring coverage to provide monitoring or observer coverage in a total of approximately 38% of the sector trips and 30% for the common pool trips. To manage this number of trips, the Northeast Fishery Observer Program has had to establish a pre-trip notification check-in system. This is a web application that is in development and will be ready by May 1st. And it's where, you know, fishermen will come in 48 hours prior to the trip or more and notify the Science Center that intends to sail at a particular time and receives word whether he's been selected for to have a monitor on board. The third item, their reporting standards and data management procedures, including the manager's report. I really see the sector manager's weekly report as where it all comes together. And I'll just jump ahead. This is a schematic of the kind of the data flow. I don't expect that you can read it on the screen. There's a copy in your handouts. But right there, the lower part in the middle, is the sector manager. And let's see. Without hitting Gene right there. And all the arrows point there. And that's the point where all the information has to come together. And the sector manager has to keep track of all this information and use it to maintain a near real-time balance of catch and apply that against his, the ace so that there's proper accounting and the ace is not overshot. But so there have been a lot of meetings, and we've actually had 5 workshops with industry and some outside expertise to prepare for that sector manager's report and NOAA's complementary report, which is a sector ACE balance report. These meetings have, we've had these five workshops at the regional office. They ranged from a very broad discussion about what do we need to know to manage sectors, to at the fifth workshop just a couple weeks ago, we had the American Society for Quality there giving training to NIMFs and to sector managers on quality assurance in their data management and their design of data systems. Like I said, dozens of staff and industry members and supporters have been involved in these meetings and working on these systems that sectors and NIMFs will need to manage the ACEs. So the next item is discard estimation. This is one where industry has not been too involved in the development of it. It's been something that's been discussed, but the Amendment 16 requires that data from observed trips, discard data from observed trips is applied to that particular trip, and that for the unobserved trips, there is an estimator that's applied for, based on the observed trips in that same stratum. And that's a new way of calculating discards, and it's information that we have to turn around quickly to the industry. And so there are methodological development questions that need to be resolved, and also programming, because we have to put it back out. And I'll talk a little bit about the programming and the application development that's gone on to ensure that we're communicating this information quickly back out to the industry. The last item on there is a catch apportionment matrix, and it's something that we hit upon, particularly under the leadership of the Science Center staff, Mike Palmer and his colleagues there, and under the leadership of Frank Almeida, have devised a system by which we prioritize the reports that are received. If we look here, the sector manager has access to all sorts of information. Vessel trip report, dealer report, VMS information, and discard information. And so he knows a trip occurs and starts filling in the blanks in this spreadsheet that calculates the catch, or this database that calculates the catch. And what if all the reports aren't in? What do you do? And so this stock apportionment matrix is something that guides how one fills in the blanks, and it can be programmed, and it prioritizes the reports. And if reports are altogether missing, it gives a means for imputing data so that you're never left with a gap and an inability to calculate an ACE balance. What I also should mention, I didn't list here, but I do want to note the work done by Bill Semro, the VMS program manager. That's been no small task either, and you know, he briefed you on that, so I don't need to belabor it, but I do want to thank Bill for his efforts in taking on not only the sector portions of it, but the considerable changes prompted by Amendment 16. So all of these programs have been a big deal. They're on track for implementation by regulation, internal policy, and in some cases computer programming before May 1st. Okay. So, again, this schematic shows all those data sources, but the real message here is that for as long as we've been collecting VTRs and dealer data in the groundfishery, we've been using those data for collective measures to meet fishing mortality targets. It's been okay to use a broad brush. Now with sector management, we need to capture all of the landings, discards, areas fished, gear used for a trip, and ascribe it to a specific trip, a specific vessel, and then to a sector so that the catch can be subtracted from the sector's ACE. And we've got a bunch of projects that are going on to support that for our own purposes, as well as for getting the information out to the sectors so they can do the same thing. Okay. Okay. One critical link in this communications network is the dealer and dealer reporting. And the dealers are they haven't been discussed fully as partners in this sector initiative, but they are really critical, and their timely and correct reporting is really critical to sector implementation and to sector management. And so we've made an effort to bring them into the conversation and make sure that dealers are fully prepared and reminded of the correctness and timeliness requirements that they have to meet, so that sectors and NOAA can have the full census of landings from the dealers, and that can be applied and applied towards ACES. So we've initiated something called dealer report cards. Our statistics office has field staff who are meeting with dealers and reminding them of the requirements, and retraining them as needed to make sure that they're fully current on what needs to be done. Vessel trip reports. There's a change in the regulations that will require submission of vessel trip reports weekly rather than monthly. We think this is going to give us more timely information, and we can circulate it back to the sectors, and we can also track, do our own calculations and track the sector ACES and their calculations by having that vessel trip information. We have enhanced a piece of software, systems to improve matching of all trip information. Again, we have to get it down to the trip level. So we've got to match that dealer report with the VTR, with the VMS report, and all those sources of information have to align. So we've enhanced a piece of software to do that. It's called a data reconciliation system, and you may hear more about that as time goes on. But I do want to stress here that the critical component, and we really hope that sector managers will stress this, and that the word will get out as through our outreach and other means, that the critical component to all reporting is the vessel trip report serial number. It's a trip identifier that is on the VTR sheet, and it has to get applied and put in the dealer's report as well. That is the critical bit that we're really driving on these two, our outreach regarding these two reports. I've already mentioned our data quality workshop with American Society for Quality. Again, we're trying to work this finer scale of data quality, and ASQ is helping us with that. We have an ongoing working group with Greg Power from the Statistics Office is leading a working group with some industry members and their technical representatives to hammer out all the final details of that sector manager's weekly report, which it's not just a report, but it's where everything comes together. So report details sort of drive a lot of communications questions and data management questions. Okay. Now, while all of these systems are being developed for the future, we're continuing to validate and correct data in the archives, which are the basis for the potential sector contributions for each vessel. As we move from fishery-wide management to individual contributions, it's becoming even more critical that a vessel's records are correct and the records that we hold for them are correct. So we've got several staff who are working with industry members who have requested corrections to their data, and those are moving apace. And we will continue to review the archive of dealer paper reports that were submitted from 1994 to 2004. It's a couple million documents that are being reviewed and compared against the data in the database, and the databases are being corrected for that purpose. There are a number of, I call them data management projects, but they're software projects, basically, that are going on. And one that I really want to flag for you all is being demonstrated today down the hall in the Wentworth room. It's called Data on the Web. And this is something we've aspired to for a long time, and we think it's a really good product. It allows a permit holder to go online, go to this particular website, a secure website, enter a permit number and a PIN, and to see the last 180 days of trip reports and dealer reports and days at sea information. A staff member named Jim St. Cyr has this set up in the Wentworth room right now. He's got a couple of workstations. So if there are any permit holders who would like to go through that and critique it, we invite you to do that. In the next several weeks, we'll be rolling out the pins and the information about this, trying to do it aggressively, but also in a waves that will allow us to handle kind of the customer service response. So through February, you'll look for letters that explain this system and the and you should get your PIN in that letter as well. The allocation management system is a tool that we've built for our in-house accounting of trip-level catch information. It's here that data reconciliation system is going to align the reports, fill in blanks if all the reports aren't there, and it's also where the discard information, whether it's from an actual observed discards or it's a calculated amount, you know, based on the calculated estimators, is aligned with trips. And then the next item on the list is the sector information management module, and this is the place where it's sorted by sector. So if you see the trip information come out of the AMS, or that allocation management module, and it goes into this, it basically hits against a roster and gets sorted by rosters, okay? And this SIM is really, it's a fancy FTP site. It's got some extra functions on it, but that's really basically what it is. It's where we're placing sector-specific information, such as trip reports, dealer reports, VMS information, rosters. It's accessible by the sector managers. It's where they can go to log a transfer balance if they want to transfer some ACE from one sector to another. They go into the SIM and initiate the transaction there. It's approved by the other party, and then NIMS, you know, hits the OK button and it shows up on their records. It's a clearinghouse for information. It's also where the sector manager will upload the weekly report. And final item on there is not only the data reconciliation is an enhanced trip matching or report matching system, but we're trying to enhance our compliance system, our report compliance system, which looks for having reports, and you know, is the report required here? Well, no. Okay, so then what are the agency's responses to that? And we're working on means of communicating with industry members and both vessels and dealers to go out there and prompt them to submit their full reports on time and correctly. One item that's been of keen interest to sector proponents is electronic VTRs. And NIMS wants to move to electronic reporting by vessels. It's something that we have a great interest in, and there's been a study fleet work going on at a relatively small scale for several years. And it's tested a NOAA system, the Flounders. Now we're on Flounders 2.0. And we recognize the benefits of having more timely paper-free data, and we want to get there. But we have a lot to learn and a lot of policies and rules to develop about the technology, about unit standards, about vessel capabilities, backup reporting, data security, data integrity, data ownership, enforcement. What's a boarding look like if it's all on a computer? Those sorts of questions really need to be worked out, and they haven't been. And so the Science Center has initiated a pilot study with about 25 vessels right now. It's going to run through October. That will have two parts. There's the field study, which is going to look at all the technical issues, and it's going to look at not only a NOAA system, the Flounder system, but some third-party software systems and test those and to make sure that we have explored kind of all the various reporting and data models and have basically anticipated them and can thereby regulate them and set standards. And part of this project will involve having IT or data experts and data forensic experts talk to us and advise us on data ownership and evidentiary issues and those sorts of things. But until the pilot study is complete and the lessons learned from the pilot study have been digested and put into policy, we still have to require paper and vessel reporting. Okay. As I mentioned, communications have been a major activity in this sector implementation work that we've been doing. And I want to thank again the industry members for putting up with it. We've been giving them lots and lots of information, and there, as I mentioned, there were five workshops that went from, you know, kind of a broad brush discussion up to these fine level discussions and you know about control points in your data quality programs. There's been a sector reporting working group that Greg is leading. There have been monthly-ish newsletters. We're doing our best to keep them monthly, but it's been a place where we've been sending out print and electronic documents that are trying to keep people abreast of these various program developments that I've mentioned here. And, of course, with the three rules, there's a media rollout, and we're responding to media queries. We think the commercial fishery news inserts or the Q&As that we've published are a good tool. I'd hope to hear back from you on that and get your feedback. And make, you know, in fact, with regard to all of these communication modes, we seek guidance from the council and from industry about the best ways, the best formats, and the sorts of information that's needed. I believe Maggie Mooney Seuss is here, and I will also take your comments on that to make sure that we're improving our communications. There have been daily informal communications, hundreds of them, that go on all the time between our staff and the sectors. And the one-on-one dealer report card meetings, again, this is where our staff are going to the dealers and stressing to them the importance of timely and correct reporting. And we hope that, you know, in the case of the dealers, that sector managers will also be using their persuasive powers to get timely and correct reporting as they interact with the dealers. And we had a telephone town hall. This was a new format for the regional office in which we had, you know, we could have accommodated up to several hundred people on the call. It ended up we had about 50. And it was just an opportunity to take a constituent group and say, here's what's happening with regard to sectors. Here's what it may mean to you in terms of reporting and dealing with the dockside monitoring. What do you think? And it was a pretty good exercise. I think it's the sort of thing we'll do more of and, you know, to address other groups. So I appreciate your feedback on that as well. So in closing, I'd like to stress that we intend to continue working with the sector reps and the members, not just until May 1st, but we're in this together, and we're going to continue working after May 1st as we work out, you know, the problems that definitely will arise in one another's data and work to resolve those. And as we have lessons learned, as we come across things that could be more efficient or that our loopholes, we'll work hard to address them in season to the extent we can, or to improve them in fishing year 11. So finally, I just want to thank the council again for this opportunity to speak to you about these things. While I'm the coordinator of these efforts, I'm not the technical expert on any of them, so I will do my best to answer your questions, but I may have to defer to a colleague who's sitting behind me. So thank you.
Thanks, Dan. Questions for Dan? Dr. Pierce?
Yeah, Dan, thanks for a very thorough and comprehensive description of how far your office has proceeded with this sector Amendment 16 implementation. You know, the service, your office in particular, has really done an outstanding job getting us to this particular point, and the communication and collaboration with industry has really been, I think, well, superb. So continued good luck and good work on that on this extremely important initiative. I'm curious. Well, you also did provide, and I'm very grateful for this, specific details, program details that have to be developed as we move this forward, such as enforceable, flexible and adaptive, for special cases and lessons learned. So clearly, you've got a nice set of objectives that you're trying to achieve. You highlighted in your presentation the fact that there are new programs and policies, at-sea monitoring being one. And I'm curious, regarding the operations plans themselves, was made known, a council decision, that a sector may elect to develop an ATSI, an electronic monitoring program, before fishing year 2012, when it's supposed to be done. So we have a few years before it's obligatory. Do any of the operations plans provide for ATSI, for an ATSI electronic monitoring program?
They do not, but they have one day remaining in which, if they wish to insert that, we could work to accommodate it.
Okay, so they do not. I sort of suspected that might be the case in light of the time pressures involved and the details that need to be worked out. You did mention during your presentation some level of ATSI coverage, but I didn't quite catch it. Sorry about that. With the program as it stands right now, with all of the details that have been identified relative to ATSI monitoring, discard provisions, calculations of discard specifically, how many trips are being scheduled for ATSI sampling within any given sector? Has that been worked out yet? Is that part of your responsibility in your office to keep track of that?
I may look over my shoulder for help from the Science Center on that. The target is 38% coverage of the sector trips, and it is rather narrowly stratified by sector, area, gear, and so it is quite possible that there will be, you know, trips that are, or rather strata that do not have a great many observed trips. But is there someone from the Science Center who can speak to that?
Dan mentioned the stratification process, which will be part of the pre-trip notification system, and that will be a critical element for us to be able to achieve the expected coverage rates for the various substrata. We think that for ATSI monitoring, we'll need between 8,000 to 9,000 sea days, and that's a combination of day trips and multi-day trips. But it will be we'll be allocating the coverage as we get the pre-trip notifications in.
Okay, thank you. Will the details of ATSI observer coverage within sectors be provided on the website, and will that information be accessible by anybody so we can keep track of what's going on with that very important part of sector management, actually monitoring what's being caught? I'm sure all council members will want to keep abreast of that particular part of the sector program.
Just so I understand the need, it would be you're interested in seeing the achieved coverage rates or actually the observed discards for the individual sectors?
Both. As much information as possible so we can be kept abreast of what's happening within each sector, that is, the nature of the catch and discard specifically, so that we will know during the fishing year how things are progressing, as opposed to waiting until the end of the fishing year and then getting some report where it's, you know, 12 months later. I, in particular, have a very keen interest in tracking it as best I can, and clearly your office, your website, communication with your office specifically is going to be critical.
Okay. We can discuss further to make what we can available.
All right. Thank you very much. And just one other final point, and that is regarding the operations plans themselves and the service's request for comments on the operations plans. Yeah, my agency has submitted some comments to Pat, asking some questions and providing some constructive input regarding specific exemptions that have been requested by the different sectors. So that has been submitted. I don't see it in the binder. Maybe I've missed it, but if it's not in the binder, I'd appreciate having that set of comments made available to all council members.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Dan, for your presentation. My congratulations. I think that certainly from our finishing up our work on Amendment 16 to where you are today, it certainly seems like you've made a lot of progress. And it also, just in listening to this, it comes across to me as though this whole process is running pretty smoothly. I have to believe that there are some, even though the council did obviously brilliant work on this when we handed it over, that there are some issues, maybe they're common issues coming from the sectors or common problems that are sort of the bottleneck of some of these things. Has that been something that's come up to you? And what are these major issues, and sort of how are they being addressed?
Okay. Yes, thank you for the question. Yes, issues have come up. It has not all been smooth, and I think the most compelling concern right now is the volume of data that need to be managed. Taking all of that trip information, aligning it, and coming up, you know, with an adjusted balance and reporting out in a rather tight turnaround. I think that many of the sector managers have and sector proponents have had holy cow moment. It's a lot of information to bring together, and I think they're grappling with that. Several are here, and perhaps you'll hear directly from them about that concern. To an extent, NOAA can help, and we've worked with the industry to try to describe or get a sense of what data are needed in the SIM that I mentioned, this fancy FTP site, and how quickly we can turn it around and put it there. Also, the programs are structured in a way that should provide the sector managers with their needed information rather quickly, directly from their members. Vessel trip reports have to go directly to a sector manager, or either directly or via the dockside monitoring provider within 24 hours of the trip. They should also have access to a dealer slip. And I understand that some of the sectors have reservations about using these what they may call preliminary information, not having it come from our system. But it is a timely source of information that may be used to generate that ACE balance in time for the, you know, hitting the send button on Thursday sometime and getting that report in accordance with the requirement for a Thursday report. So I think that's an issue. I have heard from sector managers there are costs certainly associated with the data management, and but I should allow them to speak directly to that.
Just a quick follow-up then. If I understand you correctly, most of these issues would come under the category of implementation issues versus perhaps regulatory issues?
My focus has been on the implementation issues. There have been quite a number of regulatory issues, particularly surrounding the exemptions, and those have I didn't address those. I know that the one lingering concern, the 6-inch mesh issue, is still to be discussed. Those have been discussed on the way. You know, again, we've been building that airplane as we've been flying it. As we were considering what exemptions could be considered, we were trying to find things that we were. And trying to anticipate items that would not be addressed under Amendment 16 that may be of interest to sectors, and we began to analyze them. But it wasn't until we actually got the request for exemptions in the fall that we could really contemplate them and get a sense of what they meant. And so by this time, the wheels are churning. The ops plans are in a draft form and undergoing review. Regulations are being developed, so we're having these discussions about exemptions while these other machinations are proceeding. So that's a challenging component of this. I don't know that this our answer is met to the satisfaction of all the sectors, but I do believe we communicated those in such times that the answers have been incorporated in their ops plans. Did that answer your question? Yeah.
Doug.
Yeah, thank you, Dan. The question I had was on the data on the web, the systems information management. Do you have a feel for who's going to have access to this? Is this just going to be something that solely sectors are going to have access to, or offices of law enforcement, et cetera?
No, we intend to make it available to all permitted, all permit holders. We intend to roll it out by fishery just so that we can manage the customer interaction. That there will certainly be calls, and we want to make sure that as we're rolling it out, several hundred permit holders at a time, that we're capable of handling the calls and questions that we receive. But the data on the web should be available to NOAA staff as well for their internal use. But it's primarily a tool for the permit holder.
Mary Beth.
Thank you. You did touch on it briefly on reconciling data streams, and it seems to me that managing the data as you move forward, that's going to be a big task. And I was wondering if you could spend a little bit more time on that. I mean, you could envision having a vessel trip report and a sector report, and then observer data comes in, all these things don't match up. And when you're going to be dealing with this many, pieces of information on a weekly basis, just how you envision that might work.
Okay, I may get some help on this answer, but one important tool that that has come out of this discussion is the apportionment matrix, and it is a simple table really that lists all of the reports. And I'm sorry I don't have a slide for it today because I think it's going to help a great deal. We're going to use it, and it's going to be programmed in our data reconciliation system, and or rather downstream of that, we'll look and see which reports we don't have, and then make assumptions from draw information from secondary sources or impute data where there are gaps, and we strongly encourage the sectors to use the same method where they do have a lot of reports and a lot of information coming in, and it may not all be in at a certain time. You can get certain information from the dealer report about the census of the entire catch. You need area and gear from the VTR. And if you don't have both of those documents, what do you do? Well, there's a VMS catch report that may be able to fill in some of the blank. Lacking that, we may have to look to some historic catch to as a placeholder until these better reports come in. Our hope is that the sector managers will have close communications with their members and with the dealers that they work with to track down these reports and get them in a timely way. Also, there's nothing though we can't accept electronic vessel trip reports right now, there's nothing to preclude a sector from nothing regulatory from precluding a sector from using them. So that would be a more timely source of information that is more easily manipulated, in a data set as well. Did I answer your question?
Well, that was helpful, and it just seems that, a lot of individual vessel owners are dealing with small allocations of certain species, and they'll be extremely critical to manage. And, you can envision that having seen a similar system in operation with many fewer vessels, if you have, a discard estimation that the observer, has one, number, the captain writes down his best estimate, and then, all that data has to flow out to places, then come back together again. And then if there's a need to adjust the landings for that particular trip, it could put somebody, over. There's just a whole bunch of issues that can arise from that. So our ability to anticipate that people are thinking ahead and the data will move quickly and that reconciliation of that data will happen in a timely manner is, I think, very important.
Okay. Thank you. Again, the apportionment matrix states which data source we will rely on for which data components. And so if the VTR and the observer's reports differ in kept catch, that value make in that case the K all, the kept all, comes from the dealer report. So that third report would do it. But the matrix, this apportionment matrix, basically assigns the priority. If we're missing that dealer report, then you'd rely on the VTR rather than, you know, as the source for it, for that bit of information.
Just one quick follow-up then. Are the sectors aware of how that works as well? You know, in case there is an issue of how, you know, it's going to be prioritized?
It was discussed at the fourth of the several workshops. They've had to absorb an awful lot of information, and it's something we'd be happy to, you know, restate and retrain and, you know, and discuss again. So thank you.
Jimmy?
I just had a quick question of Amy, and that was she stated that she thought she'd need between 8,000 and 9,000 C days, and I was curious to how does that compare to what we're currently getting for observed number of sea days we're using in multi-species fisheries currently?
It's a little bit more than doubling the program. And those days were just the at-sea monitoring days. So in addition to that, there'll be the observer coverage on top of that.
Sally?
Thanks. Thanks, Dan. You mentioned that obviously the sector manager is an important point in dealing with this huge information flow. Could you just describe in more detail, this is kind of building on what a question that Mary Beth asked, I think, how specifically are you supporting sector managers so that they don't become a choke point? Because I think they could, and I think there are ways either using the Flounder system or other third-party data management tools that could prevent that from happening. So if you could just say specifically what the agency is doing to, and I know that's part of what you did today, but just more specifics about what resources are going to be available leading up to May 1st and afterwards to make sure that sectors that are using Flounders or sectors that are using other data management tools are able to work out the kinks and prevent the sector manager from becoming a choke point. Thanks.
Okay. I brought this slide up on the screen. Of course, it's a little hard to read, so I encourage you to look on your handout. You're right. The sector manager has all this information coming in, and what we need is once a week for a sector manager's weekly report to come out and say, here's my balance for all of these stocks. One thing I should note is it becomes a daily report when certain triggers are met, but you know, for most of the year, we hope it'll be a weekly report. And I think there are several answers to your question. First, the way some of the programs are described or have been developed, they've been structured in a way that gets the information to the sector managers as quickly as possible. And that's through requiring that VTRs go to the sector managers within 24 hours of the trip. And it's also sector managers, we hope, would have access to dealer slips within 24 hours or shortly after a trip. And there could be a level of accounting that begins at that point. The discards associated with any trip, it's going to take us about 48 hours to turn around discards after an observed trip. And then it's going to be Amy's staff and others at the center continually look at the data and try to refine it. But there should be a basic observation. The base data should be available within 48 hours. close on its heels, we're going to turn the crank and come up with the estimators for the unobserved trips. So, and that's automated. Once we have the observed trips, the estimators will be generated for the unobserved trips, and then up to 4 days afterwards, there's another level of auditing of the discard information. So, at that level, the sector manager has rather rapid access to the critical pieces to form the report. And what we are looking for in the sector manager's report is a balance. We want to see that there is a positive balance in all of these accounts, that trigger levels have not been hit for daily reporting. And we want to see that all the trips are accounted for and that there is a really good number, a really solid number in there for keeping track of how the sector is doing relative to its ACE. We expect that the first week's report is likely to be using some secondary data sources, some of the things that are lower on that apportionment matrix. The subsequent week, we should have a dealer report posted on the SIM, that Sector Information Management module. We should, probably in 2 weeks out, have the vessel trip report posted. So those are things that NOAA is going to push out through the SIM, make available there, so that sector manager's report, 2 weeks, 3 weeks out, can continually be refined as these better data sources become available. Of course, if the sector has implemented some means of electronic reporting or is getting information directly from dealers on a more regular basis, there's nothing to restrict their use of those tools in getting those more refined reports in the early going. The one thing that will lag a little bit is the discard information. And the other thing that we're doing to help this out is we're not just throwing the sector managers to the wolves. We fully intend to have our statisticians, our data people, working with the sector managers, being available to help track down data disparities. We're going to be generating a report. Our data are going to lag a little bit from the sectors, but we're going to generate a report. And if we're seeing deltas between what we're coming up with in our balance and what the sector manager's reporting, it's got to be a phone call. It says, do we have a full accounting of all your trips, or do you have a full accounting of all your trips? Where are we not connected here? Our intent is to help make the sectors successful and not, pin them down the first time that there's a disparity in our reports.
David?
Yeah. It appears to me that you have a very heavy reliance on computers here. This is an electronic system. There's information flying back and forth. I guess I'm just a low-tech person, but I got $30,000 worth of electronics in my wheelhouse, and when I want to get home on a snowy day, I rely on a compass and a watch and forget all that stuff because it probably isn't going to get me there. I have an autopilot that takes a 17-degree jog to Stabat at approximately 9 miles every day, despite the best technicians in the world working on it for 2 years and replacing every part in it. It has a computer glitch in it. So my question is, what's the backup system here? What's the low-tech system to back up this really high-tech thing? Because it appears to me that every time you have a handoff of information here, there's possibilities of errors, whether it's computer program errors or viruses entering the system. My wife's junked 4 computers in the last 6 years because they caught viruses that turned out to be terminal. You just couldn't, it cost more to recover them than to buy a new computer. So I'm very concerned that this is over-reliant on computers, and I want to know how we're going to back this up when those computers fail, because it's not if they fail, it's going to be when they fail.
Okay. The sector data systems, they're professionals, and we expect that they will have their own backup systems, whether it's archiving the information off-site or at a central server or something like that. That's not something that we've explored or required of the sectors. I would think that ultimately NIMS would be a backup for the sectors in that we are receiving all of the information that the sector manager is getting. And we do have backup systems, backup servers, and data systems. Also for vessel trip reports, we've got paper. For dealer reports, we have been getting electronic dealer reports since 2004, and if all the electrons take a day off, then we can go back to paper there. They're required to maintain paper records. As far as the accounting that goes on, we have high confidence in the regional office that we have the backup data systems as well as the emergency power systems to maintain a computer network, and because we are totally reliant on maintaining that, and we hope the sectors are taking similar precautions, or else they'll have to rely on us as the backup for that information.
So, but there is no specific requirement to print this stuff out in paper somewhere and archive it, either on the part of the sectors or you folks. Conceivably, some kind of evil genius could infect this entire system and blow it all up, and it would just be gone.
There is no requirement to print it out, correct?
Okay, well, again, being a low-tech person, I would suggest that maybe people might want to at least think about that as something that's required of the sector managers or something that's required of you folks or something, that somebody prints it out somewhere and they can actually refer to a piece of paper at some point, because, again, maybe it's just me, but I'm really concerned. At least the computers I've had on my boat just don't seem to respond very well, and I haven't been very impressed.
You know, the council, Pat Kirkle.
Well, just quickly to respond to that, as Dan points out, there is paper backup for all the source information. I mean, the VTRs are still paper, the dealers are required to keep paper, and the observer reports are all paper. So there is, if we absolutely had to go back to all the source documents, we could. It's just not something that could be done in real time, obviously.
Terry.
Yeah, thanks, Dan, for all the effort, work, and resources that you've collectively put into making this sectors work here. And thinking about post-May, which is probably the most critical that we need at this point for me to think about where we need to go. Do you have plans to work with or meet with the sector managers to help troubleshoot problems and develop a set of checks and balances? I know recently in, for instance, monitoring hearing, we had some communication problems that shut down the industry, just because it was a glitch. And that thought of just calling on a phone and picking up the phone and calling if something doesn't pass a straight smell test really is helpful.
Thank you for that question. Yes, we do intend to work and communicate closely with sectors to reconcile the reports. We'll be generating an ACE balance, and we'll look at the sector's balance and say, "Wow, that's odd. Let's call them." And in our Sustainable Fisheries Division is going to be staffed in a way that several staff members will have a portfolio of sectors, and they'll work continually with those three or four sectors. So they'll know the issues, just based on the daily conversations with the sector managers or the members. And one thing that we haven't hammered out yet, but I think is a really good idea, is to have an open discussion with the sectors. They probably get tired of the idea of workshops because we've had five at this point, so we'll call them something else. But, maybe a two-hour meeting every month or 3 weeks where, say, how's it going? And we can, start to discern what the problems are and what the lessons to be learned are. And if it's something we can change during that year, We'll try to do that or look at doing that, but it's certainly something that can be applied to the next fishing year so we get better at this. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. I just and thinking about it as the ACEs start to get towards the full mark, I think it's really going to be necessary to to take a look at that, because we're crossing new grounds here, and I hate to have it, you know, shut a fishery down, or else, you know, be able to work with them. When we all work pretty well picking the phone up.
Glenn.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, Dan. Just a question that pertains to this slide here. It's the third box over. It says, in all cases, vessel also provides VTI directly to NIMS. I just was wondering why we're having a double reporting of the VTI, since they're already going to the sector manager.
It is an important tool for the sector manager to get that, but there is nothing in the rules that relieves the vessels to report their catch to NIMS. And so it's a triplicate form, I believe, and one of the pages would go to the sector manager and one to NIMS. So.
Is that going to be mailed in or faxed?
Yes, since we're still having to deal with mail, it would be mailed on that Tuesday for the previous week.
So you're using the postmark on it then?
Correct, yes, sir. Again, we do support someday going to electronic reporting, and that would take care of that duplication problem. But, as I mentioned in the presentation, that's something we have some issues to overcome and policy matters to work out before we can get to there.
Anyone else on the council? Go to the audience. Maggie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maggie Raymond speaking for Associated Fisheries of Maine and the Sustainable Harvest Sector. We want to acknowledge the extraordinary amount of work that the agency has put into this process, the sustainable fisheries people, the statistics people, the Science Center, the Observer Program, and the extraordinary amount of outreach that they've done to the industry and you know, the real communication, I think, that's gone on between us in developing how we implement this complex new system. I just also wanted to say that in future communication, Dan was looking specifically for feedback, and I think that the CFN inserts have always been extremely useful, and so hopefully those would continue. Several council members raised questions about the data management and how, what a big job this is going to be for the sector manager. And if you look at this schematic that's up on the board, one of the things that is missing is a system for the boats to report catch directly to the sector manager on either a daily or a trip-level basis. And I'll take blame for not bringing that issue up sooner, but it's a critical element that would, I think, greatly improve the data quality that that the sector manager has to deal with. We've looked into trying to, in a very short amount of time before May 1st, to develop some software that would allow that to happen. And it's going to be very costly. We'd like to raise that issue, make the council aware of it. The agency is aware of it. We've talked to Pat about it. And we were just hoping that some of the resources that were given to implementation of ground for sectors could be directed to that, and if perhaps the council agrees, maybe they could agree with our position that that kind of resources is needed to be provided to the sectors so that we can have that direct flow of information from the boats to the manager regarding catch. The only other issue I wanted to raise just on that, you know, on the radar for the future is the at-sea monitoring costs, the levels that Amy mentioned. Their projected cost for that is $4.6 million, which is going to fall on the industry in 2012. And we're looking for Congress to provide those funds to NIMS so that they don't come out of the industry. If that is not successful, we're hoping that the council is going to reconsider that decision at some point about imposing that significant cost on the industry. Thank you.
Pat.
Yeah, just quickly in response on the funding issue, we have talked with Maggie about that, and of course we have been supportive of getting startup funds, for lack of a better way to put it, to the sectors. We've provided quite a bit of funding this year. There is some additional funding available right now to the sectors through GMRI that could be used for these data management systems. And in addition, we're working on trying to develop spending plans for the money that's available in 2010, and certainly we support, we meaning the region supports providing more of that money to the sectors, again, for quote-unquote startup costs. And so I expect there will be some funds available. And on the dockside monitoring, of course, we've paid for the dockside monitoring for 2010, and also hope that with 2010 funds, we're going to be able to extend that coverage at least partially into 2011. So we are also supportive of keeping these monitoring levels at least the level they're at, and providing funding where we can to help with the startup of these programs.
Vito.
I found Dan's presentation riveting. So.
Thank you.
And I'd like to echo to Maggie's pointing out, you know, the amount of effort that FSO and Sustainable Fisheries and the Science Center have put into reaching out and trying to find some solution to this very complex web. But just one thing that we put in our comments that may have come out kind of confusing, and hopefully I'll try to say it simply and it won't be confusing, but is we have a policy right now that's requiring a reporting frequency. And that reporting frequency is, and I just want to, you know, speak at least for the sectors that we've been involved with and talking to other sectors quite regularly, that to do this under paper, to go out and chase down a paper VTR daily, to chase down a dealer handwritten record, to transcribe all of that stuff in, to pull down stuff from the SIMS website and get daily moving average, discard rates, apply them, do the stock apportionment, do all of the things that I know FSO has seen as is quite a large undertaking for an agency, let alone a single sector manager. The only reason we're at the point we're at is because people know that this can't be done unless it's done electronically. At least that's our position. You need to get electronic stuff coming from the vessels, going into an electronic system, and then applying all of this stuff electronically. So the frequency of reporting that's required right now by Amendment 16 is silently depending upon private sector and government sector getting the information on time, because we're depending on electronic systems that we're still the airplane that we're flying as we're building. So I just wanted to point that out. And if the fallback is paper, but you haven't met a reporting deadline as a result of not implementing that secondary system, are we giving enough credence to the fact that we are asking the sectors to do something that the sector managers pretty much are saying would be impossible over a period of time, to be dealing with purely paper as the backup if the primary system fails? And the only way to, we were talking about the choke points, I think Sally brought up, in you know, the sector manager being a choke point, is to try to identify what roles are essential for the sector manager to provide, and that's making sure that the raw data input is as complete and timely as possible, and all of the complex calculations that have to happen after that, and reconciling that needs to happen after that, maybe that's a better role for FSO because they're going to overwrite whatever we do anyway, and we'd rather have them do that work and feed it back to us so we can update the following report. So those are the things that we're working with other sector managers on and continue to work closely with Dan and folks to hope to streamline what roles the sectors actually need. I think adding reporting burdens and frequencies on sector managers purely for the sake of feeling that this is the only way that we'll know that they're paying attention to their quota is unnecessary. I think all sectors will identify which one, two, or three stocks are going to be critical. They're going to look at the SIM website, see where their daily discard rates are, pay attention to that, let their sectors know, and let them spend more of their time managing their members as opposed to managing, doing weekly and daily calculations and sending them off to NIMS because they feel like they're going to be diverted from their primary role. So, great presentation, Dan.
Thanks.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Jimmy?
Yeah, I have a follow-up question. I don't know if it's to Dan or to service, but I'm reading the, I guess it's the blueprint that shows the multi-species catch report layout for the VMS. And right now on the stocks that we're managing jointly with the U.S. Canada, so it's half of Georgia's and the eastern Georgia's, Area 4 and Area 2, we report daily our catch and discards. And I'm wondering if two things. Number one, I see this report doesn't have anything in there for discards. So are we losing that capability to real-time monitor the discard rates? And that's the first question. And the second question is, are we going to have to still do the U.S.-Canada area reporting daily as we do now, or is it going to, which I'm hoping not, that we're going to incorporate it all into this. So if that's the case, we need to have a discard calculation here, estimated discards on this.
In general, Amendment 16 changes a lot of the reporting requirements for the entire ground fish fleet. It will include an additional declaration of four broad stock areas as part of the VMS declaration for each trip made from the dock, which is going to enhance our ability to do stock apportionment of all the catches in support of ACLs in general and in sectors in specifics. There are also some provisions that allow us to try to avoid unnecessary duplications of data collection, particularly with things like special management programs, where we'll get away from some of the daily reporting requirements for sector vessels because they're being met by the sector manager's reporting requirements. For the U.S.-Canada area, actually I have to consult 16 because it does vary by program, but we will still be able to do NIMS tracking of the eastern U.S.-Canada shared stocks with Canada based on information we get from VMS on a daily trip level and then updating that as we go along as we get the more definitive data from dealer and also from VTR. But we'll have an even enhanced level of that for the sectors because each sector will have a specific ACE for eastern U.S. Canada haddock and eastern U.S. Canada cod. And so on their weekly report, they'll be reporting their complete catch, both catch that's kept and discards for their ACE for that stock.
I think I heard. So I think what you're saying is this: we will still have to report the U.S.-Canada catch as we are today.
And I'd actually like to consult Amendment 16 on that exact detail.
Well, and then what about the second question? There's nothing in here to report discards. So how do we? It just says a species cap. So in this report, we're not reporting on daily on discards.
Can you tell me which page so I can see exactly what you're
looking at? Well, I'm looking at the VMS report that was given to us and the new matrix of what we'll be reporting, and there's nothing in there that shows. It just says all species cat. Nothing for discards. I think it's page 4. Page 4.
I'll confirm that by going back to 16 and talking to Doug Crystal and get back to you and the council, but my understanding is that for U.S. Canada, we're still monitoring discards using NEFOP and ATSI monitoring.
Anyone else on the council? Anything further under this item? Okay. Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you. Good day.
We'll break for lunch. Be back at 1 o'clock.